Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And today we're going to help you through your munchie crises by presenting a variety of products, snack products, that is, that are actually good for you.
Yeah, how about that? Munchies that are good for you. Now, I'm sure they're not 100% good for you.
Well, I think that they're better than
the average. There's no question about that. And some really innovative thinking on the part of the people who produce them. And we found them, of course, partially thanks to the Specialty Food Association Fancy Food Show, which Anne covered in detail just recently. And if you're interested in finding more about that, if you go to our OTM in print page, the whole piece about the whole status of specialty foods is right there for you to explore, and I'm sure you'll find it very interesting. But in the meantime, a very interesting snack.
Yeah, well, a line of snacks. It's the R.W. Garcia group.
Robert William Garcia.
Robert, well, you remembered that.
And the business is still in the family, and here's the family spokesperson telling us about what they're up to these days.
Janelle Chakuti, you are one busy lady. I think it took me 3 months to get you scheduled for an interview.
Well, thank you for having me, Ann.
Well, we like your product and your company. R.W. Garcia has an interesting history, and it's always on trend with whatever people want and need. Give us some background. It's your parents founded the company, right?
That's correct. My parents started the company over 30 years ago. It's a pretty funny story, actually. They took out a loan for about $1,000 and bought a van in 1982. And then began selling chips right out of the van to the local grocery stores. And before long, they realized they could make the chips on their own and have more control over quality and innovation. And now today, three generations of our family work in the business.
Oh, great.
It's a really exciting place to work, and it's just very exciting.
Now, hold on, Janelle. You missed out a whole chapter because you told us your family's originally from the Mediterranean island of Malta.
Our in-laws.
Oh, it's your in-laws. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm confused.
Those are my in-laws.
They're your in-laws.
Our family is actually from my father was born in New York, but he has roots in Puerto Rico and also in Spain. He is Robert William Garcia, which is why our products and our company is named R.W. Garcia.
Okay.
Great. Okay, so I got that messed up. Well, listeners, I get it messed up all the time, don't I?
Yes.
You don't have to agree, smart Ellie.
Tell us this, though. Your product line has developed and changed over the years. Could you give us some rundown on that?
Absolutely. Over 32 years ago, Robert, as we call him, really saw a niche for an opportunity for healthier, higher quality, and minimally processed products, tortilla chips, on the marketplace. And that's really what drove him to start the company originally. At the time, we had your basic yellow corn, stone ground tortilla chip, which was sitting on a shelf that was not as highly competitive as it is today. Over the years, we've started to really look at how can we innovate beyond the yellow tortilla chip cooked in oil, lightly salted. And by doing that, we've come up with all sorts of different innovations and trends over the years that have provided not only delicious new snack food items, but also including more nutrients and more better-for-you snack food. We like to include different types of seeds in our products, flax seed, for example, sesame seeds. We also use vegetable inclusions, so we'll add to some of our products, we add beet or sweet potatoes, and we mix them all with corn, which gives the corn a really unique flavor depending on which vegetable we're using at the time.
Well, now, the reason
Now, you mean to tell me that Lay's aren't healthy?
Right.
Well, I personally have a hard time reading their ingredient deck. I'm never quite sure what all those things are they're talking about.
Oh, boy. The reason that we caught up with you for this was because the United Nations declared this, for some reason, I don't know why the United Nations involved with anything actually having to do with it, but they declared it the Year of the Pulse. And you, Dave, did you know that it was the Year of the Pulse before you started your Pulse line of chips?
Well, that's an interesting story, too, Ann. We actually started developing our Pulse line in 2015. Around summertime.
Wow.
Our family takes a trip together once a year. It's it's all of us that work in the business, and we take a week to go to a retreat together. And that's usually where these type of ideas kind of come to play. And as we were at this retreat, my mother, Margaret Garcia, who's
She's
also our
really
VP of sales and marketing.
I'm looking at her picture. She's very pretty.
Yeah, well,
you look like her too.
Yes, when you put us together,
yeah, I can see.
You know, we look almost like sisters.
You do,
which
in fact.
Makes her really happy.
Yeah, I mean, you do look like sisters. I had to read this to make sure that she was your mother.
Well, she had us young, she was reading the paper, and it was about pulse crops in Canada and how they're really working to encourage food manufacturers to use more pulse crops in their foods. And she said, gosh, this is really cool. Did you know pulse crops add nitrogen back into the soil? It's a sustainable way of farming. I said, no, I didn't know that. What's a pulse crop?
Yeah.
And she goes, well, legumes, black beans, chickpeas, sweet peas. Wow, that's neat. She
lentils.
Goes, we should do that in a tortilla chip. And we said, well, let's give it a go. So we started our R&D on that, like I said, in June of 2015. And then, lo and behold, in December, the UN comes out with the International Year of the Pulse, being 2016. Uh-huh. And we thought, wow, that's really timely.
That's great.
Well, now you went.
And,
now hold on a second, Janelle. Janelle, you went beyond that as well, though. So there's pulse contained in these tortilla chips, but they're also ancient grains. They're sort of different, right?
That's absolutely right. So what we did is we took the beans, which we own R.W. Garcia. It's not only family-owned, but we also manufacture all of our own products. So we have full control over from the ingredient sourcing all the way through production. And we take these, we have three products in our line using three different pulse crops, black beans, chickpeas, and lentils. And then we combined it not only with corn, but also with ancient grains, quinoa, amaranth, and chia. Which gives it a little bit of a different bite, but still totally delicious, and offers a more nutrient-dense snack food.
Wow. Makes me want to snack more.
Yeah. Our chickpea with roasted red pepper, too, by adding the roasted red pepper to it, really gave it more of a feel of a hummus-type chip.
Yeah, I like that.
Which is
really
delicious.
Yeah. Yeah, when you were at the fancy food show, did you see the lady that makes dessert hummus?
Oh my goodness, dessert hummus!
She makes it. You know, it's so you have hummus, it would be chickpeas, tahini, and then she puts in chocolate chips.
I would have never thought to put chocolate chips in hummus. That's innovative. Was it delicious?
No, I'm not going to comment. Oh dear.
Hey, you know, you got to try. You know, you got to keep trying. Because the more you try, the higher likelihood you will eventually succeed.
Well, you undoubtedly had the chickpea brownies, right?
Chickpea brownies, even.
And blondies.
Those are also with chocolate.
Yeah, also. The blondies, but they have chocolate chips in them too.
That one's a bit of a stretch. To be totally honest, it's a bit of a stretch.
What fun. Well, I love pulses anyhow, and you know, we've always been big consumers of things like lentils and chickpeas. So how do you figure out what's going to be hot next? I mean, just, you did that on your own before the UN got involved. Like, what are you working on now?
So we are always looking at different ways to innovate and come out with new products. We are in development on a few interesting items, but I can't share them at the moment.
I will promise
you that you'll be one of the first people to know and try them. We are probably looking at doing extensions on some of our current lines. There are vegetables out there that haven't gotten their full due, we think, in snack food. And I think that, we'll be playing with different vegetables that we haven't yet tried to put into a tortilla chip and see how we go.
Yeah, well, the big thing, of course, is seaweed. That's, you know, if they don't screw up depleting the crop, the seaweed, it shouldn't be that expensive. I've been wanting to write an article on seaweed for ages, but I can't get the product samples, and nobody will part with them, and they cost a fortune to buy.
Yeah. Seaweed, you know, we actually did experiment with seaweed a few years back.
Yeah.
And it gave seaweed and corn mixed okay, but it tended to be a taste that you wouldn't want to just keep snacking on.
Oh, really?
So we chose not to go with seaweed. We find that root flavors, like we have the beet, our beet crackers, sweet potato crackers, they work well. Those roots tend to work well with corn.
Yeah, somebody sent us sweet potato cookies, too.
Yeah.
That would be delicious. I think that would work pretty well. Does it have chocolate in it?
No chocolate in it.
As long as it doesn't have kale in it.
Yeah, that we're a little tired of kale.
I got news for you, Janelle. Kale is over.
I know. I think beet is the new kale. I have to say that when we were at the fancy food show, we were showing our pulse line of tortilla chips, and then we also were showing our sweet beet crackers, and almost 75% of the people who came by my booth tried the sweet beet cracker first.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's just a curiosity, an interest, and especially for those who don't really know how to cook beets. Beets are a little bit more challenging to cook than your average carrot, for example. And I think that there's definitely some curiosity there of what a beet cracker might taste like and would it work with, you know, toppings or cheeses and things like that. The response on our product was really positive.
Well, you know, beets, some people don't like them because they're so earthy. You know,
yes.
This one chef that we know says that they taste like dirt.
Sarah Moulton.
Sarah Moulton, I know. I didn't want to mention.
She actually said this in public, Janelle, in front of a large audience. She said
beets taste like dirt.
Her husband likes beets, and she can't stand them because they taste like dirt. but they're supposed to taste like dirt.
Yes. Well, I have to tell you, when you mix it with corn, it actually brings out the sweet tones of beets, which absolutely have a sweetness to them.
Yeah.
So that's why, like I said, Peter, I'm going to be sending you some of these beet crackers. I think you'd really enjoy them.
Right. We have
they're
all,
one of
know,
my favorites.
I said this on an earlier interview, that if anybody asked me what's always in my refrigerator, I would have to include boiled beets, because Peter makes beets all the time.
Well, they just go with all kinds of good things.
And yeah, they do.
And if not, you can always just eat them on their own with salt and vinegar, and they're just fine.
Yeah, well,
that's right.
They're there in the refrigerator, and they're accompanied by preserved lemons and vodka at all times.
Here's a funny story for you, Janelle. This is my second cousin, Jane, who came to visit us here in the United States, here in Pittsburgh, and I made some...
She's from England.
Yeah, I made some roasted beets on the barbecue grill, which are really excellent.
Oh, yeah.
You pick up lots of good flavor. But she asked what they were when I served them, and I said, those are beets. She said, they're not. and I suddenly realized that throughout almost all of my life, and clearly all of hers, she associated beets with a similarly colored vegetable that was cut into slices and served preserved in vinegar with onions.
So
a beet was a pickle.
That's right. That's right. In fact, my husband, who's from Australia, they love to have those pickled beets on their hamburgers.
Yeah. Absolutely, yes.
On their hamburgers, and that's a thought.
Yeah.
Well, does he have fried eggs on his hamburgers too?
Absolutely. He gets the
there
work.
There you go. Okay. he's a fair dinkum Aussie, yes.
I do have to say, though, our sweet beet crackers are also available in the UK, and they are really, really popular there. So even though they are used to beets, they're actually the pickled beet in the UK is probably more popular than the beet is in America. I think there's a lot of growth for popularity for the beet
America. It's a cult. There's no doubt about it. Unlike Harvard beet, which tastes quite disgusting.
Oh, I think I was raised on those. My mother
they taste really
sugar
disgusting.
And stuff.
Well, listen, we'll have to put a couple of bags of beet. Chips on one side and take them to my brother for Christmas and see if he likes
yes.
them.
He can get them if he's near Costco in the UK. He can pick up the sweet beet crackers there, our sweet beet crackers, anytime.
Well, I'll get him hooked with a sample first.
There you go. There's nothing like our cracker, sweet beet cracker with a little bit of goat chev cheese
nice.
And a little bit of basil on top. It's just really
boy,
delightful.
Basil, huh?
And a beer on the side.
Well, that's the sound. That really sounds good. What's your favorite goat cheese? Do you have one of those?
I can't remember the name of it now. The goat cheese. I'm used to quite a few artisan local cheeses here in California. We're really blessed with some really great goat cheese.
That Cypress Grove would be close to you.
Yes, Cypress Grove. Yeah. They make a beautiful goat cheese. They're, I think it's called London Fog is one of their cheeses.
Humboldt Fog. It has the strip
Humboldt
of
Fog. Yeah. That's the one, and it has a blue cheese taste to it.
Yeah.
They
got an award for the Bermuda Triangle, which is also quite good. So and the other goat cheese that was winning all the awards was the Vermont Creamery goat cheese. It's good too.
I haven't tried that one. I will have to try that.
Their cultured butter is fabulous.
Oof.
Yeah, well, we're talking food, you know.
I know. It's making me hungry, Anne.
No. I'm glad we finally caught up with you, and I hope we get to talk to you more frequently and with all your new products you're coming out. Again, everyone, look for R.W. Garcia in your snack aisle and the new line of Pulse Chips, which are mixed with ancient grains and are healthy and sustainable, which is what everybody wants right now. Janelle, thank you for talking to us, and say hello to your parents.
Thank you so much for having me, Ann and Peter. I really enjoyed speaking with you today.
We had fun, huh?
Absolutely.
Okay, Janelle, ciao, ciao.
All right, take care. Thank you.
Bye.
And don't go away, because we'll be back with more healthy snacks right after the break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, those of you who are addicted to pizza, and I can look in the mirror and see one of those.
You can.
Yes, I can. But, I mean, I'm not going to lie to you.
We have a shelf in the refrigerator dedicated to these ancient grain-based.
Well, that was, you jumped ahead
here. Oh, I'm sorry. Well, go ahead.
I'm just saying that Smart Flour is our next guest. And I'm not going to lie to our listeners and say that the pizzas made with ancient grains are like Pizzeria Uno or anything vaguely like that. But that's the whole point.
And they are good for you.
They're good for you.
That's the important thing after all. Pizza that's good for you.
Yes. Samir Shah, the world is certainly a different place, isn't it? I mean, who would ever suspect that you would have a product such as ancient grain pizzas? You don't think that's odd?
Well, it's definitely innovative. It's definitely different. But one of the trends that we have noticed is that people are looking for higher quality carbs, better flours. I think the days of the pure bleached white flour are declining, at least among food-conscious people. So ancient grains are a way to get a lot of nutrition, and they also fit into the desire for not overly processed foods. And so ancient grains are ancient because they haven't been processed and changed a great deal over thousands of years.
We ought to mention that you were the marketing director of a company called Smart Flour Foods. And I would say, I just finished my article on the overview of the Fancy Food Show, your company is right on trend for ancient grains. And tell me the composition of the flour you use.
So we use the ancient grains sorghum, amaranth, and teff. They're only three of a list of maybe over 10 grains that are considered ancient. And you're absolutely right. We're very on trend right now, but I like to say that we were ancient grains before ancient grains were cool, in the sense that this blend that we're using actually dates back about 11 years. And so it was very innovative when it was first introduced and is now part of a larger trend.
Yeah, now give us a little bit, you're teasing us about the background of this company. Could you just do a little brief narrative about how it got going?
I'd love to. It's actually a great story. There were two ladies here in Austin, Texas, and Georgia Hutton was the first, and she was had a background in baking and culinary. And she had a friend whose daughter had celiac disease, so gluten was absolutely off the table. And her mom was very disappointed by the lack of good options on the market. So Georgia took it upon herself to make a better gluten-free preparation, and in doing so experimented with a variety of different grains and potential ingredients, and wound up with this fantastic blend of sorghum, amaranth, and teff. She then linked up through a series of other kind of, events that happened, linked up with a woman by the name of Erica Leakey, who was she was a physician's assistant in a GI practice, and so she was encountering a lot of this type of GI distress, celiac disease, etc., and shared the products, the initial product with a few friends, and everybody loved it. So Erica and Georgia then decided to commercialize the product. They tried a variety of different products, but got a lot of traction with a pizza crust, started selling it to restaurants around Austin and then more broadly around the country. Around the same time, Charlie Pace, who's the current CEO, was working in technology, but realized he had a gluten intolerance, happened to try the product around town in a restaurant in Austin, Texas. And when he did so, he loved it so much, he started inquiring more about it. It was so different and so much better than the stuff that was available elsewhere. And he got very interested, and to make a long story short, he decided to acquire the company 5 years ago in July of 2011. And after that, he rebranded it to Smart Flour Foods based on what he believes and what we believe to be the applicability of this product and of ancient grains to a broad set of consumers, not simply focusing on the celiac or gluten intolerant group, even though that's a big and important constituency and customer base for us.
Now, it's interesting that these grains are ancient, and presumably they stopped being cultivated and were replaced by highly GMO'd, if you like, wheat, because wheat gave you a better yield. So how did you manage to get these cereals reintroduced into farms?
Well, in reality, they never completely stopped being produced. Teff still remained a staple in Ethiopia, and sorghum and amaranth were being produced in India and some other places in the world. That being said, to your point, the production in the U.S. has increased, and there are now farms that are focused, I think some of them happen to be in the northwest part of the country, but they're focused on these types of grains and producing them in a very clean and organic manner.
Now, not all ancient grains are gluten-free.
That's correct.
So you had to do a lot of research to figure out which ones were gluten-free.
Yes, I think that was a part of George's analysis, was determining that, hey, there actually are some grains. You know, normally if you say the word grain to someone that has a gluten intolerance or celiac disease, they're going to assume that that's a taboo product for them or a product they can't eat. But so just discovering that there were grains in the market that, or available at least, that didn't contain gluten naturally, so was a huge discovery.
Now, you have not only just like a retail market with these pizzas and the pizza, the toppings and shells, but you do a food service, a much broader market in food service, don't you?
We do, and food service is the history of the company. We launched the retail line in 2013, and it's growing by leaps and bounds, but the food service side is actually an older business for us, and so we do sell pizza crusts, hamburger buns, and hoagie rolls to that market. And the hoagie rolls and hamburger buns are based on the same smart flour blend that the pizza crusts are made from. They have many of the same taste and nutritional properties. They're dynamite, by the way. They taste like a whole grain bun and much more appealing even when toasted than a traditional kind of white flour bun.
So one of the hidden secrets is this stuff also really tastes good.
That's the big difference. I mean, nutrition and texture is important, but if the taste isn't there, you know, that's kind of the first gate. And I think that's central to our strategy because we want to create products that the entire family or groups of friends can enjoy together, regardless of whether someone has a food allergy or does not. So we want everyone to enjoy the same food. We think there's societal value, family value, and being able to share a meal together. But if it doesn't taste good, then that's not going to happen. So taste is very important to us. It factors into everything we do, and our products are very popular. When we sample them at trade shows, we sort of end up becoming the default lunch counter for the staff around us because people just come by and devour it.
That's cute.
Now, it's interesting that you've chosen so far not to sell the flour as a product.
We have in the past, actually. We were selling the flour in retail at one point in time.
Okay.
But we decided not to simply because we felt that there was more value in impacting the world with pre-made products that would have a great flavor and kind of be put together. That's not to say that we won't market it again at some point in time. I also didn't mention that in the food service market, I sometimes overlook it, but we do sell a pancake and waffle mix, which restaurants can buy and use to make whole grain gluten-free pancakes.
Yeah, I read the pancake one. I thought that was a coup, a great coup. It's tricky working with these flours. I mean, we've interviewed people who have written whole books on how you adjust each individual type of flour from the ancient grains. And you can't just substitute them in for how you would use wheat.
That's correct. The proportions are different. Sometimes you need other ingredients there for a binding agent. So it can be a little bit of a different recipe.
Now, how long have you worked with this company?
I've been here since January of 2014, so coming up on 2.5, approaching 3 years.
Uh-huh. And what did you work in before?
So I was in technology, marketing, and operations and sales before, as was Charlie, the current CEO, and Paul, our COO, and the three of us had all worked together at technology companies in Austin before.
Uh-huh.
So when Charlie decided to go in a slightly different direction, or majorly different direction, I guess, and look into a food company, he pulled in a couple of people that he knew from the past from his team, and so we joined to help him.
Okay, because I mean I'm getting this picture better now. Because when I first talked to you, I said you didn't really sound like a food person.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting. Paul has, even though he has technology sales in his background, he also has spent a lot of time as a sous chef, was involved in starting a restaurant, and so he's had a culinary background to some extent. Charlie and I and Will, our CFO, have not had as much of a culinary background, but we've become very immersed and very knowledgeable about this field. I am, you know, kind of what you would call an amateur foodie, very interested in food. I do a lot of cooking myself. So it's definitely, food is definitely a passion for everybody here, even if, you know, the experience levels may vary.
Uh-huh. Now, you attended the Fancy Food Show in New York?
Yes, we did.
And so this was probably not your first Fancy Food Show, right?
No, this was actually our second to exhibit and our third to be at.
Okay, and what did you think of that? Isn't that a circus?
It is. You know, Expo West, Fancy Foods, these are all very big shows. But, you know, we really enjoy them because there's such an energy about good food, clean food, new innovative food products. There was a booth across from us that's a gourmet ice cream and gelato. There was another booth a couple down from us that makes Belgian waffles in Belgium and then freezes them and sells them in the U.S.
in places like Walmart. We just interviewed the guy who was responsible for bringing that product to the U.S.
No, that's a different company.
So you're familiar,
it's not Stroop Waffles?
No, that's Dutch.
It's different.
He's talking about Belgian waffles, which are a specific kind of waffle.
All right. Well, this is another kind of waffle called a Stroop Waffle.
I see. Interesting.
They were there.
Yeah, so there you go. I mean, there's just so much food innovation going on right now, and there's such a change occurring in the foods that we buy and the health consciousness of the average consumer.
Yeah, well, this was my take on the show when I was approaching writing this overview, which I've done for 8 years now. It seemed to me that what set this show aside was it was probably the most health conscious show I've ever been to.
Well, and if you ever have a chance to attend Expo East or West, they're also very heavily focused in the same area. Fancy Foods also has a contingent there that's very decadent, the wine, the chocolate, the really high-end food. But it is, to your point, very health-conscious, and I think Americans, by and large, are starting to look more into these options. And mainstream retailers, even like Walmart and Target, are now vastly expanding their organic lines. And if you follow the trends, once these big retailers start, they've got so much reach that once they start marketing some of these products, they really start becoming a part of the trend and of the daily and common use within the household. So
I have a different take. I have a different take altogether, is that once you get somebody like Walmart interfering, starting to carry organic, the requirements to be certified organic change. and the product becomes less organic, and they have a big influence.
Well, they definitely have a big influence in terms of their size and scope and ability to influence the market.
Right.
it's interesting. We have a Whole Foods store. At one time, it was the only Whole Foods store between Philadelphia and Cleveland, Ohio, which is quite a long distance, and it happens to be walking distance from our house. It's been open now 13 years, I think.
I can't believe that.
That's great.
They just announced that they're going to open another Whole Foods store within a quarter of a mile of this one that's been there for 13 years.
Twice as big.
Yeah, yeah. I was talking to one of the supervisors that I know there today, and she says she thinks that the latest rumor is that their 365 line, which is their...
Yeah, well, that's what's...
They're going to devote this particular store just to the 365 line, the difficulty they're having is getting agreement from city planning to be able to expand the parking and the space in their original store. So they're going to new development just down the road.
Well, they've miscalculated their 365 requirements anyhow, because they certainly never expected people who were buying lower-priced items to be actually buying more of them than that the difference justified. So they don't even have big enough cash registers.
Yeah. Now, we should tell you that this particular store is doing 5 times the volume that was originally planned for that store. It's absolutely amazing how many people go there. And
wow.
There's only one thing I have to close with. I need the secret, but I have to have you whisper it. How do you manage to get barbecue, Franklin Barbecue in Austin, Texas, without starting to queue at 8:30?
Unfortunately, if you have the answer to that, I would like to know.
Okay. Well,
but on a more serious note about that, I think that they're doing some sort of a call ahead and you can pick it up type scenario now. I think they're doing a little bit of that. I don't know. It was kind of a big ballyhooed thing, and then I don't know if it actually they did it or if they wanted to keep the cachet as is, but I think you pretty much have to be the president to cut in the line there. I think he's the only person that's been able to do it.
Well, thank you so much, Samir, for sharing the story of ancient grains in pizza shells and all the other things we talked about.
Well, they have toppings, too, in the pizza.
And we wish you continued success, because it's clear you deserve it. You're feeling great.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that, and thanks for the opportunity to share.
Thanks, Samir.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, we have a good supply of this product that Peter has fallen in love with, from the Happy Vegan. And it turns out that the company founder, Sharon Gregory, is practically a neighbor of ours. And welcome to On the Menu, Sharon. You are a holistic health coach and wellness educator. What exactly is that?
Well, that is somebody who helps people to make healthier choices with eating and just overall lifestyle. I got interested in helping folks go down the right path with their wellness journey through foods. I've learned a lot about foods and their healing powers, and I like to be able to share that with people and help them to make better and healthier choices.
You know, you had a cancer diagnosis.
That's right.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you know the vanilla queen, Patricia Rain. She had really serious cancer. Doctors sort of threw up their hands in despair at one point, and everybody was counting her out. And she did food research, and she has been in remission for like about 3 years now.
Yes.
And she wholly believes that she's going to, that the food is going to make a huge difference in anybody's health.
Agreed.
So she's going to be right.
If the body's given half a chance to heal, it definitely will. And that's what turned my interest into looking more closely at my foods, adopting a plant-based whole foods diet to support my health and hopefully my ongoing health.
Right. Now, I mean, give us a time frame here. You were diagnosed with cancer at age 44. That must have been a shock.
It was, because I was otherwise somebody who I thought was very healthy, no history of cancer in the family. And so it was definitely a shock.
And had you been a vegan before that?
Oh, no. I don't even know if I knew what being a vegan was at that point, quite honestly.
Amazing.
Yeah, and I wasn't sure exactly what a vegan was, and I didn't think I really wanted to be one, whatever it was.
Yeah, I'm kind of like that too.
Honestly, I probably had meat in my diet 3 meals a day, and I thought that that was the only way I could get protein, and really felt that I was living a healthy life, and didn't really realize, I just hadn't really thought about what meat can, how it can affect your body.
So you weren't, you were a holistic coach before then or not?
No, I wasn't, actually.
What did you do?
I was just completely motivated to change my life. And as I started learning more about foods and their effect on our health, I just got very passionate about that and realized that there's just not a lot of education out there about foods and their healing powers. And I pursued that path and wanted to help people to learn.
Now, it's kind of a stretch from that, though, to making food products.
Yes. Well, my biggest challenge when I transitioned to a vegan, a plant-based lifestyle was giving up cheese because, you know, cheese was in my diet daily. And that was probably the hardest thing for me to give up. And I couldn't find anything in the supermarkets that would satisfy that cheese craving that I had. And that put me in the kitchen and had me just starting to experiment with some creations. And I came upon the nacho no cheese and started to share it with my non-vegan friends and family. And they loved it. And that took me down that path.
Yeah, you were something funny, like a mathematician or something, right?
Yeah. My formal background is a master's degree in mathematics. I taught high school math, but that was 20-some years ago, and since I've opened two other businesses, and then the Happy Vegan is the most recent.
And what is this Six Sigma, because you are a master black belt, isn't that?
That's right. That's right. And not to scare anybody away on that, but a Six Sigma master black belt is somebody who is able to solve complex problems. So we use a lot of data analysis and statistics to help us understand where process problems are and fix them.
Wow. Now, this is an approach to manufacturing that was developed originally by the General Electric Company. Am I correct?
So it was actually developed by Motorola, and it was indeed used in manufacturing, but since has been adopted by all kinds of industries, financial services, healthcare, really any industry that's looking at improving their processes.
You know, the thing that was really standout about your no cheese?
Nacho no cheese.
Nacho no cheese. Is a lot of these vegan products that people develop have really serious texture problems.
Mm.
And it was a very natural texture. And your product has a very natural texture.
Thank you. Yeah, and it's natural ingredients. So, you know, you do find some fake cheeses, and some of them are just quite honestly scary.
Oh, yeah,
cheese. Yeah, I completely agree with you. The texture is just really off. So I wanted to create something as natural that's just using whole ingredients, you know, like almonds and peppers and onions and just good for you ingredients, but with the right amount of spices, can really make a nice cheesy dip.
Now, you remember Happy Cow?
Oh, yes.
Well, it's really funny. I was in Whole Foods today, and I was just walking down the cheese aisle, not shopping on the cheese aisle, and this lady and her son, I think it was a son who must have been about 5, was attracted to the display of this
Laughing Cow.
Laughing Cow, whatever it is. And she said to him, "No, that's not good for you. That's not good cheese. The good cheese is down here."
And that's true. I think a lot of people are realizing the negative effects that dairy can have on your digestion, and a lot of folks are just lactose intolerant, and it causes a lot of problems, digestion, allergies, and so forth.
Well, you know, my theory is I don't think adults should be drinking milk anyhow. I mean, that's not how we're built.
Exactly. It's kind of weird to be drinking, you know, from a cow, you know, if you think about it. It's sort of gross.
Oh, I don't know. I saw a big ad today, some great athletic performer gains the strength he or she needs from drinking lots and lots of milk.
Yeah, the media is just crazy, you know. They did the whole ad, the Got Milk, and, quite a bit of controversy out there about really the benefits or not about dairy and milk in particular.
Well, you know, there's this, our granddaughter is, I think, allergic, kind of, to what? Milk solids or something like that. Cow milk solids. And I don't know why or anything, but so they found that she could drink almond milk.
Sure.
And she likes chocolate almond milk, which I think is totally disgusting, but that's all right. the people have picked up on this almond and other nut milks, cashew milk and so forth, and to the point where dairy farmers are really suffering. And so they're trying to have counterattacks on the new types of milks, the nut milks. I mean, the dairy farmers are protesting because their profits are really sinking.
Yeah, certainly. And there's a lot of benefits to having plant-based or nut-based milks. You know, there's just no very few side effects.
Uh-huh. Right. Well, you should tell us something more about this nacho no cheese. I mean, you have two flavors, and they are?
Yep, so we actually have three flavors. So we've got the original flavor, and it's just a cheesy flavor, and I'll put it on chips or rice or potatoes. We have a habanero hot, which has a nice, beautiful kick to it. And I'll add that with maybe a salsa or put it on vegetables as well. And then a tangy mild. Tangy mild is a nice lemony flavor. So my favorite use for that is on steam veggies. You know, you like to add a little bit of lemon juice to your steam veggies. Uh-huh. It's a really nice way to flavor up vegetables and make them a little more exciting.
Now, how do you sell these?
So they're in jars. So we sell in supermarkets and local markets, as well as online on our website. And they come in 12-ounce jars, and they're shelf stable until you open them. Then you need to put them in the refrigerator.
Okay, and your website is thehappyvegan.com.
That's right.
That's great, and you are a. Are you planning on new? I mean, do you have something in the pipeline for new flavors?
So we have a couple of ideas for new flavors. I have not brought them. I haven't brought them to market just yet, but certainly there's some research and development going on in the background, as well as some other sauces that can be appreciated by vegans as well as non-vegans and folks who are just looking for some healthier options for sauces.
And like what?
Well, like one of the things that we've been talking about is like a vodka sauce.
Yeah,
so, you know, vodka
that.
Sauce typically is full with cream, and so we've got some good research for doing vodka sauce, a vegan vodka sauce, and like a mushroom stroganoff, something that you could just easily add to some rice or some whole grain or gluten-free pasta.
Well, I mean, I guess the possibilities are endless.
They really are.
So, and I mean, I'm just trying to write this overview of the Fancy Food Show, and I have a whole category called Free From.
Yes, and that was certainly a big theme at the Summer Fancy Food Show in New York City.
Are we
this
there?
Year. You know, definitely a lot of folks looking for more non-GMO, so free of GMOs or free of dairy. Definitely is getting a lot of attention.
Right. And, I mean, the list goes on and on and on about all the stuff that you could be free from.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the stuff that you could be. Vegan, kosher, just non-GMO, all kinds of things. Well, it's an interesting world out there. Did you enjoy the show?
Oh, we love this show. We met some really great people, learned about some new products, and got a lot of great feedback about our product as well. So we'll be there next year.
Well, were you exhibiting or?
Yes, we were. We had a booth and had a full setup and a full team with me helping to
sample
and talk about Nacho Noches.
Yeah, it's expensive, isn't it?
And the show itself is expensive, but then there's also just the travel expenses and living expenses. But certainly, we had a great time. It was quite the learning experience for us.
Yeah. Do you love all the animated characters that roam around the floor?
We know they didn't visit us, so we did not see a lot of animated characters, and we were so focused on our booth. I unfortunately didn't get a chance to wander around too much.
Oh, yeah.
It was a busy show for us.
Yeah, that's the problem. If you're doing that, if you're actually doing the show, you can't leave your booth. That's true.
Yeah, well, it was definitely busy. A lot of interest because, you know, there isn't another product really like Nacho Noches out there. So people were very curious, and so we did a lot of tastings.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the whole vegan thing is growing so quickly. It's just amazing to me. So, well, I'm really happy to meet you by phone and email, and I wish you much success with the Happy Vegan, your enterprise, and we're certainly enjoying your product.
Thank you. I'm glad to have met you as well, and thanks for this opportunity.
Thanks, Sharon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, you know, I don't really rely solely on my own research and reactions. I get a lot of feedback. I don't mean to use that term, but that's what I get. And I share. Believe me, I share. Especially, I have the manager of my gym is a very dedicated vegan. And so this next product I gave her, and she was ecstatic. It's a company called Pure Genius Provisions, and the product is a chickpea-based brownie and blondie. How about that? I have been surrounded in my life by people with really intense sweet tooths or teeth. I don't know. And we're talking to one who managed to change or to transform or elevate her sweet tooth into a business. Nancy Kalish from Brooklyn, you're going to tell us the backstory of your company, Pure Genius Provisions, and tell us about it seems like a very unlikely thing, but you have chickpea-based, bean-based brownies and blondies.
I do indeed. Well, so here's the thing. I was a health journalist for a really long time, for about 20 years, and I knew exactly what I should be eating to be healthy. I had interviewed all these doctors and medical experts, but one thing kept getting in the way of me actually eating healthy all the time, which was I have this incredible, raging, crazy sweet tooth, and I really, despite all of my knowledge in this area, I wanted to eat something sweet for breakfast, lunch, dinner, but then I would feel terribly guilty if I actually gave into it. And so, you know, the two things were always coming kind of smack up against each other and making me pretty miserable. And
how did you get to be a health journalist?
Well, I just was, I was a writer, believe it or not. I actually started out as an editor at Cosmopolitan Magazine. Uh-huh. This is quite a while ago. And everybody there wanted to really write and edit stories about sex and romance. And
the Cosmo Girl, right.
Yeah, and nobody really wanted to do much about health. So as the junior editor, I was given the health stories, and I found I was really fascinated by them and really interested. And so even after I left Cosmo, I started writing about health, and the more, you know, I always felt like I was, wow, really learning something that could benefit me and my family. So even better than great sex tips is great health tips.
Okay, so there you are now, and you have this issue with your sweet tooth.
Yes, and I also have a young daughter who has an issue, you know, who had the same issue. So in any case, I was always looking for something at the health food store that would satisfy that sweet tooth. And I bought and spent a lot of money on a whole bunch of stuff, especially things that were gluten-free, which was important to me, and have a really clean label, no junk, no preservatives, also important, not too high in sugar. Anyway, nothing ever, you know, came up to Oreos, and basically, which are my nemesis, and I would kind of take a bite and often end up throwing it out, or then even if I ate it, I would feel unsatisfied, and then I'd end up, you know, eating something not so great for me anyway, and then I would feel bad, and anyway, so I just, it was making me crazy, frankly, and so I had heard a lot about bean brownies, and I went on the internet, just like everybody else does, and I looked at some recipes, and I thought, oh, okay, I'll try this. It's worth it. You know, they seem
pretty
healthy.
Where did you hear so much about it? I had never heard about bean brownies until I read about you.
Yeah, but you don't browse the internet looking for desserts either.
I guess it was a bunch of people, like little newsletters that I got. So every once in a while it would crop up. Then I'm in Brooklyn, New York, which, as you know, is a great foodie place. And
especially Brooklyn. You're from Brooklyn. Yeah.
I am from Brooklyn. And so there was a cafe that opened up with a Japanese dessert cafe, and the Japanese actually use beans in a lot of their desserts.
That's true.
And I tasted a chocolate dessert with beans, and then that inspired me to look it up on the internet and see what was going on. Anyway, so I tried some of the recipes that I found, and they were really awful.
Cardboard, right?
I didn't even get that far sometimes. They tasted like beans. They smell like beans.
Oh, yeah, they do, don't
they? They were just gross. And so that was not good. However, they did have a really amazing texture, to be honest. They didn't have that cardboard texture. They had, like, a really rich, fudgy, delicious, well, they weren't delicious yet, but a luscious texture that I thought, you know, if I could just get the beany taste out of there, maybe I'd have something.
Yeah, that liquid is actually one of the secrets to getting the texture, isn't it? Like the stuff that if you open a can of chickpeas and you throw out the juice, you're throwing away the thing that people find very useful for the texture. And
well, you know, that's interesting that you should bring that up. So that's called aquafaba. They have a fancy name for it now.
Oh, I didn't
know.
There's
a whole cult around aquafaba. If you go to, like, aquafaba.com, you'll see all these recipes. I actually don't, I'm not currently using aquafaba in my recipes. I just use the beans. I threw out the cooking liquid. But I am planning some products that use it because, you know, I didn't know about it. I didn't know what I was throwing out until, again, I heard about it on the internet. And so now I'm developing some products, some treats that use it.
Uh-huh.
But I had no intention of ever starting a brownie business, but I started kind of becoming a little obsessed with this recipe and getting the beany taste out of it. And so I literally was making a couple of batches or more every week and tweaking and, you know, and it took me a little over a year, but finally, I figured out the right way to process the beans and exactly how much to add and what other ingredients to add. And you know what? They really taste like brownies. There's no beany taste, and there's certainly no beany smell because nobody wants a healthy brownie that tastes like beans. Yuck.
True.
So mine tastes really pretty good. They really taste like the real thing. And they were the first treat that I was actually satisfied by. We have two flavors now, the chocolate, deep chocolate brownie and a chocolate chunk blondie, which is like a kind of like a chocolate chip cookie.
That, yeah.
with chocolate chunks on top.
That's very cute.
And, and I decided, I really wanted to share them because they were really good, and I figured there must be other people out there like me.
Uh-huh. And so what was your next step to
Well, okay, so my next step...
Because that's the hard part. The next step is the hard part.
The next step was, so I figured out the recipe sometime in like April or so, 2015. And there was this big trade show coming up in September called Expo East, which is a big natural products trade show in Baltimore. And so I decided to be really optimistic and buy a booth there. I'm like, oh, I have 3 months. No problem. I can launch a company and be ready.
Good grief, and the quantities you need for that kind of show.
I know. Well, I learned my lesson, but we, in fact, did launch the company at Expo East. We had our packages all ready, and we had samples, and we got our first order, there. And even more important for me is that the guy who is the sales director for the Northeast Division of Whole Foods stopped by, tasted a brownie, and basically 4 months later, we were on the shelves in Whole Foods Northeast.
Oh, amazing, amazing story. And that was, this is the year of the pulse, right?
Yes! I didn't even realize I was on the trend here.
Yes. I always thought it was strange that the United Nations would be declaring food trends.
Well, you know what it is about beans? They're so good for you. They're so cheap to grow. They can be so plentiful. They're a really good substitute protein source, an alternative protein, plant-based protein. And honestly, what's great and what's actually changed even in the last year since I started business, and certainly since those days when I was going into a health food store and trying to find, better tasting, healthy snacks, there's so many more people doing great things. So I think I'm the only one using beans in baked goods right now in treats, but there's also, these incredible people. Have you ever tried Bonza pasta? It's a chickpea pasta. It's not made from flour at all, just chickpeas. Yeah. And it's great. It really tastes like, regular pasta. It looks like regular pasta. So, there are people using chickpeas in all kinds of and other beans in all kinds of inventive ways. It's
right.
Very encouraging.
Yeah, I just did an article that's probably going to publish soon for a regional Tribune Review, and I had a whole section on on products using beans and the pastas. Red lentil lasagna.
I had the lentil pasta the other night. I thought it was great.
Yeah, it's amazing. And all those tortilla chips.
R.W.
Garcia. Yeah, well, anyhow. And it's healthy, so we all feel good about it.
Exactly. You don't feel like you're suffering if you want to be gluten-free or you're vegan or, people are coming up with much better alternatives.
Right. And you said you have other products in the pipeline. What are
those? So we have the deep chocolate brownie and the chocolate chunk blondie now in September at this year's Expo East in Baltimore, which will be mark our first year in business. We're going to be launching a cinnamon crumb bar.
Oh wow!
So it's really good. If I do say so myself, It's again. Based on beans, and all our products are at least 40% chickpeas, and chickpeas are the first ingredient on the ingredients list. But it has these really, really delicious crumbs. When I was a kid growing up, there was one of my favorite treats. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it. It was called a Drake's cake, and it was like a round coffee cake with these delicious cinnamon crumbs on top.
Oh, right.
Anyway, so I've done my version of it. Uh-huh. And we wanted to give people, I got a lot of requests for a non-chocolate flavor, so I decided to develop that.
Now tell me this, what form do you start with chickpeas? Because this is one of the banes of my existence, because I adore chickpeas, but I've tried to start with fresh chickpeas, and it is the most tedious product to work with, shelling them.
Okay. So, yeah, I don't shell them. I start off with the dried beans that are already ready to be cooked. I use a pressure cooker, which cooks them very quickly and very evenly. Mm-hmm. And then you get that delicious aquafaba if you want to use that in something. And then I start with that, basically. So, we do cook our own. We don't use canned or anything like that. Yeah, they're not that hard. Of course I'm used to it. I've made probably a couple of thousand pounds, if not more, of chickpeas by this time. But a pressure cooker, that's my good tip for you.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, it's good. you can buy them flash frozen too.
Yeah, you can. You can buy them flash frozen. I mean, I really encourage people to keep them on hand, either some really good, there are also some very good organic chickpea brands like Eden Organics that has a BPA-free can. Keep them on hand. The flash frozen ones are even better because they don't have to be drained. And throw them into whatever you're making. Throw them into a salad. Throw some into certainly a soup or a stew.
Peter uses them with fish.
Wonderful. Fish and I mean, why is everybody still buying hummus? It's the easiest thing in the world to make your own hummus and flavor it any way you want and control the oil, the amount of oil, and put fresh herbs in it. There's just so many variations.
Did you try that woman who makes the dessert hummus?
Right. I tasted that, and it was it. I think they need to call it something else other than dessert hummus, is my feeling.
Yeah, with the whole delighted by category.
That's delighted by, right.
Yeah, it's not
right.
A good name, yeah. Okay. Well, anyhow, so you enjoyed the Fancy Food Show. It was the biggest one they ever had.
I did. It was extremely overwhelming. Yeah. I mean, I felt very keenly I was just one little company in a lot of companies. But we were on this in this section, I think it's called New Products on the Shelf.
Oh, right.
And it was really great being in that section, first of all, because I had all these other new little startups near me, but also because those people were really doing some very innovative, interesting things. And, after I stopped feeling overwhelmed, it was just fun introducing the product to everybody. I got really, we got a great response, and which was wonderful. And then it was just also wonderful to see all the innovation going on, frankly.
Well, there certainly was a lot. And did you enjoy, since you're an Oreo freak, did you enjoy the dancing cookie?
There's always something really, wacky happening.
I know.
At these shows, all of a sudden,
Exactly. Anyhow, one year we had Obama impersonator who was so like the president. I really thought that's who it was. And I'm assuming that, do you have a store locator on your website?
Yes, so we do. We are in a bunch of Whole Foods, so in the Northeast and also in the South, like the Carolinas, Georgia, Tennessee. And then we're available on Amazon. We're available on a really great site called directeats.com. Mm-hmm. And then also on our website, puregeniusprovisions.com.
Okay. Your website is puregeniusprovisions.com.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Nancy, congratulations to you, and I expect to hear from you a lot more of products and that you're going in a whole straightforward direction with your beans.
Thank you, Anne. Thanks so much for having me on. I really enjoyed it.
It's fun talking to you, Nancy.
So anyway, here at On the Menu, we hope you're feeling healthier as a result of today's program already. And if not, you still have a chance to get involved.
Run out and buy some chickpea brownies.
Whatever. Or ancient grains or whatever you like. And we'll be back same time, same place next week. We hope you will be too, and we'll look forward to seeing you then. And in the meantime,
bye-bye.